from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from the basement bunker again, somewhere in Dallas, Pennsylvania. But joining me via Skype, Matt Henderson. How you doing, sir?
Hey, doing well, Bill. I'm, as you mentioned, connected via Skype here in our Williamsport outpost. So enjoying this fall week that we're having here so far. So hopefully everything's good with you, sir.
Oh, it certainly is. Another great week. And keeping us on the air, I want to give him a shout out. The hardest working man in the business, DC Taylor. How you doing, DC?
Hi, good morning, guys. How we doing?
We're doing great. Any day we get to join you via Skype and talk about shale gas energy and why it matters in our lives is a good day.
I love hearing about it.
Joining us in a few minutes will be Rusty Fender, of course, a staple of the program. We can't get rid of him. He still figures out a way to get on this program. But lots to talk about and lots going on. I want to remind everyone, we had George Stark on the program last week, but if you have a chance, go check out the Shale Energy Alliance's page, where you can go to Frack and Vote, take the pledge to vote. It's real easy. Just sign up there, and they'll send you some cool swag. You can put on your hard hats or put on your coffee mugs and that kind of stuff. So all good stuff going on in the energy industry. We're approximately, what are we, Matt, 20 days, less than 20 days now from the election?
Yeah, about, like you said, about a couple weeks, 3 weeks away. And as we know, our topic here today, and as it's been ongoing, energy is key to, you know, not just Pennsylvania, but the election, you know, so it's a pivotal state, pivotal time in the, I think, in the country with a lot of things moving forward, a lot of potential projects that are tying around energy. So I think you have some great stories to discuss and some good interviews coming up on the show today as well.
Certainly. No, I'm looking forward to it. We'll have some good guests. We have Jim Bognett running for Congress in Northeast Pennsylvania. Be excited to hear what he has to say. And then a good friend of mine, State Representative Josh Kale from the Beaver County area, just north of Pittsburgh, over where the Shell Cracker plant is. He's going to be joining us here shortly to discuss his initiative with some of his colleagues in the House to get Pennsylvania back into, you know, full production, you know, get people back working. So pretty exciting things going on. And again, we talk about it, the election coming up. Luckily, we didn't have a debate in the last week or anything to either critique or talk about. Maybe I think we all could have used a little break there. I think there is one more debate scheduled between now and the election, so it'll be interesting to see how it all wraps up. But energy remains focused. I'm getting a kick this week. I must have received 10 to 12 different news outlets calls, especially from around the world, asking for time to come up and either tour a frack site or drilling rig or see what's really going on in Pennsylvania as it relates to hydraulic fracturing, energy production, and the election. Of course, it's an issue that keeps popping up. Obviously, President Trump is pro-energy. Vice President Joe Biden has flip-flopped his position a few times on his beliefs of hydraulic fracturing. What concerns some is that his vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, there is a big supporter of the Green New Deal and ending fracking. So it's going to be an interesting time in the next couple of weeks. But what we do know here, a couple of news stories, U.S. shale oil output to drop approximately 123,000 barrels per day to 7.69 million barrels per day in November. EIA reports that the U.S. shale output is expected to decline because of, you know, overall output dropping as it relates to less travel, less manufacturing activity, and just COVID response. But with that being said, another story, COVID crisis to leave some scars for years to come, but natural gas to bounce back, says IEA, that's the International Energy Agency. As a result of the coronavirus pandemic and the economic impacts, energy demand is set to drop 5% by the end of the year, with oil and gas investments falling an estimated 18%. But the Global Energy Watchdog on Tuesday issued a flagship world energy outlook for the rest of 2020 and into 2021, with the pandemic overtaking all energy demand scenarios over the coming 10 years. But with that being said, there is much to be looking forward to as it relates to energy, as LNG shipments start to go back around the world, as manufacturing starts to pick up. And quite frankly, maybe a seasonably or an unseasonably cold winter that we haven't had in a couple of years here in the Northeast might even be enough to lift it up. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Bill, and I guess just real quick on that first story you mentioned about, you know, the production is going to drop. And, you know, I think just that drop is significant in the point that, you know, how much we're producing here as a country right now. You know, we go back, you know, we've doubled production in, you know, just a short 10-year span out there. You know, and it ties in with your second story out there, as you mentioned, with the global pandemic and, you know, where we're at in terms of the economy and you know, utilization out there. So, yeah, I think there's just a lot of positives moving forward. You know, a good thing is, you know, we're positioned in a way that, you know, the economy can rebound rather quickly. And as you mentioned a little bit later, we're going to have an interview on some of those initiatives out there, I guess, to try to push forward, you know, bringing this back to the United States where we can, you know, start utilizing this oil and this gas, you know, more locally as well. So exciting times ahead. You know, there's some other projects I know we're both involved in that's just really trying to bring this back. You know, continue the growth and continue the downstream sector of this this industry as we move forward. So looking forward to it. And I think, you know, as everybody wants to put 2020 kind of in the rearview mirror, I think 2021 is going to be an exciting year as we move forward.
And another story that builds on what you were saying there, Matt. LNG recap: U.S. exports rebound as global natural gas markets tighten. NGI reports that feed gas deliveries to U.S. export terminals from Maryland to the Gulf Coast continued ramping up this past week as the global gas market tightens and the latest hurricanes that hit Louisiana shut down LNG facilities. So we're trying to make up for some of that lost demand, and also the demand around the world is still there. And then there's another article here that I was reading. Is U.S. shale finally bouncing back? Oil price reports that oil price dropped to the first and second quarters of this year, and oil companies did close in wells and lay down drilling and frack crews, but activity bottomed out in late May and has mounted a steady recovery in the months since. Rig counts have increased and raising from a low of 251 up to 269. But again, we've talked about this on the show, that rig counts are really a lagging indicator anymore because rigs do so much more work than, especially the more advanced rigs, than they used to. So one rig can do the work of two or three rigs. But what has been more spectacular is the increase in the deployment of frac crews as operators have allocated extra capex to bring drilling uncompleted wells or the inventory of wells in the production. And I think it's just a good indicator of the industry coming back, because when those ducks run out, the drilled but uncompleted wells, then you got to bring back the drilling rigs to spend some money and drill new wells. So it's the cycle of the industry. And as you just alluded to, we produce so much energy here now compared to 10 years ago. Our markets can withstand changes that would have otherwise been crippling. I can remember growing up in high school and in grade school, when a hurricane would hit, it would be a big deal in the Gulf Coast. And I'm not belittling it, but as it relates to energy prices and the way that we live our lives, I mean, we didn't see any fluctuations at the pump. We didn't see any fluctuations on our energy bill during that time frame. So again, I think that's because of the energy industry. Another thing here that caught my mind: Petroleum Marketers Association of America becomes the Energy Marketers Association of America. The Petroleum Marketers has changed or declared a new era for its members, and the fuel industry has renamed itself the energy industry. The name change reflects the industry's growing portfolio of both liquid fuels and other alternative energy sources, such as renewable diesel and biodiesel, that have played a critical role in lowering emissions over the past half century. And the Federation of State and Regional Trade Associations represents about 8,000 independent petroleum marketers across the country. What do you think about the name change, you know, just in general, how people are shifting from like the word petroleum over to energy and things like that?
Yeah, I think it's a clean move on their behalf, I guess. It sounds cleaner than, you know, everybody hears of petroleum. And, you know, as I'm drinking my coffee here from my John Wayne mug, it comes back to Hellfighters when they were, you know, the old Wild West, putting those dirty wells out back then, the oil wells and so forth. But and again, I think it's a, you know, a good move. And as I mentioned, you know, the diverse portfolio of energy sources out there, and just like a sign of the times, whether you want to call it a political move or just recognition that, you know, it's a broader market out there and broader energy sources are being utilized and desired, you know, from the community at large.
another story I hit here. This is an Appalachia-based story in Bloomberg. Trump hits Biden on fracking appeal on Pennsylvania voters. We talked about it a little earlier, but Donald Trump has accused Democratic Joe Biden of wanting to cripple the natural gas and drilling business in Pennsylvania during the president's recent visit to the battleground state. And Trump said during a Tuesday evening rally in Johnstown that Biden would abolish hydraulic fracturing or fracking, something that the Democratic nominee has repeatedly denied. I believe what he has said, to be honest, is that he wants to stop it on all federal lands. Now, it's not a big deal in Pennsylvania because we don't have very many federal lands, but out west it's a big deal. I think it's bad policy. I don't think we should be cherry-picking one way or another. In fact, I think the way we should be doing it is opening up more federal and state-owned lands under the proper authorities to develop those resources, because the royalties generated from the federal and state-owned lands go to benefit everyone. And we've seen it out west and here in the states and other, or here in this part of the country, where those dollars, whether it comes from DCNR leases or offshore leases that get reinvested back in the state parks, I think that's a revenue stream that people just don't appreciate because they don't understand. And I'd rather see us expand that revenue stream, quite frankly.
Yeah, Bill, I'm just jumping in there. And I agree, you know, his terminology, I guess, is federal lands, which obviously is all he can control from, from banning fracking. But his policies on pipeline and so forth, are scary, I guess, to people in the industry, rightfully so. But to your point, you know, opening it up more, you know, always people would now think, okay, well, we're going to major highways through these state forests, national forests and so forth. But, you know, you and I have both worked on projects, you know, with state or federal owned land. And we all know the long-term process, a planning process, saving those view sheds, utilizing existing corridors, using areas to develop these well pads, or not even approaching or going on to the state-owned land out there. So I think that's what people need to sometimes understand is it doesn't just mean you lease this parcel of land, you can go in and do whatever you want. You know, it's a very, very long process with lots of public input and minimizing the impacts while maximizing, he mentioned, the benefits and the rewards. And, you know, when there's a tremendous amount of money literally under the ground that can benefit, you and I in the Commonwealth and the larger economy as a whole, it's something you truly got to take a hard look at and consider. And, you know, especially let's look at, you know, this pandemic. It's, we see, what are we hearing? A $5 billion, $5.5 billion state deficit just, coming in through this year. So, I agree. You know, I think that's something people need to look at and understand the opening that up. It does not open Pandora's box into a bunch of, dirty development potentially.
Dirty development. Well, I'm going to leave you with one last story here. It's actually out of Louisiana. Company plans largest U.S. CO2 storage project, E&E News reports. Developers announced plans yesterday to build and operate a regional carbon capture hub near the industrial producers in southwest Louisiana that they say will be the country's premier carbon sequestration project. The company Gulf Coast Sequestrations, or GCS, said it has submitted initial filings to EPA to secure the permits for carbon dioxide injection wells used for long-term underground storage of the gas. And the reason I throw that out there is I think it also demonstrates that this industry is in a unique position to, you know, address issues worldwide, and whether carbon sequestration is the way to go, it remains to be seen. But what I like about this is the opportunity to create more jobs, new industry, and it, maybe these things build off of each other. My understanding is you can actually take that carbon gas and through different processes turn it into a usable product, you know, some sort of like a carbon fiber product or things like that. I also know that you can use the CO2 gas in a variety of ways to help make oil more productive. So maybe that's, again, we take a product that we otherwise don't want floating around in the air and inject it into the ground, but we produce more oil out of the ground at the same time too, beneficial reuse. But I like to share those when they pop up every once in a while. With that being said, why don't we jump over to Fender's Fast Facts? What do you have for us this week, Rusty?
And thanks, Bill. And on the 17th, we mark a historic milestone in music. On the 17th of October, Beatlemania, one of the biggest selling and biggest grossing stage shows, a kind of a knockoff, if you will, and DC probably followed this. It ran from May of 1977 to October of 1979, October 17th. I thought it ran a lot longer than that.
Right.
But okay, it was just those two intense years, a total of 1,006 performances. A little about Beatlemania, of course, it was the chronological history of the Beatles via their music. 29 songs. were performed during the show. Other than some unscripted onstage banter, once again unscripted, there was no dialogue for the three-hour performance. I didn't know that. It was music, right. music. Right. Originally conceived and produced by Steve Lieber and David Krebs, Beatlemania debuted in Boston at the Colonial Theater, famous venue, April of 1977, quickly achieving sellout status. This is truly amazing. The Broadway show, of course, ran until October 17th. In the first 6 months, every show, 7 days a week, sold out. And for the remaining 18 months, a year and a half, they had a sellout rate of 99.89%.
All right.
Isn't that incredible?
Oh.
It was nominated for one Tony Award, and believe it or not, with all the music, with all the fashions, with all this, the 60s and 70s fashion, it won the Best Lighting Award. The best lighting. You know, now we have all kind of pyrotechnics and, you know, you know, neon projected lasers and all that. You know, this was 1977.
Yeah.
You know, you were dealing with incandescent light bulbs back then. again, it premiered in New York City 1 month after Boston at the Winter Garden Theater, a very famous venue on Broadway as well. And in this 2 year run with such incredible statistics, incredible sellout, DC, why did Beatlemania end so abruptly after two incredible years? It took the nation almost by as much storm as the real Beatles back in 63.
Okay, and when did it end?
It ended in 1979, October 17th, this coming weekend.
Okay, I thought it was going to have something to do with the death of John Lennon.
No.
No, okay. Let's see, all the guys...
They were going to get a revival after that, which coincided 2 days after the death of John Lennon.
Oh, wow.
Very good.
Okay.
But why did it end? Why did something so incredibly phenomenal coast to coast end so suddenly?
I'm going to say it had to do with the rights to their songs.
Correct. Once again,
the copyright.
You are
issues.
Amazing. Yeah. A $5.3 million lawsuit is why it ended so abruptly. Okay. Apple Corps, as you all know, the Apple label, the famous Beatles label, Apple Corps, great name, Apple Corps, filed a $5.3 million lawsuit in 1978. It took a year to come to fruition. Of course, they used the 29 songs we mentioned before, and they owed $5.3 million in royalties and copyrights on all the Beatles songs they could not pay. It ended, and to this very day, they're still paying back some of the royalties for almost $6 million 40 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Very good, DC. The end of Beatlemania, October 17th, 1979. And those are the fun facts for this week, Bill.
Thanks, Rusty, for your Fender's Fast Facts. We appreciate them. We're going to take a quick break on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule. The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's now my pleasure to introduce a friend of mine from the other side of the state, State Representative Josh Kale, calling in from Beaver, Washington County is his district. Josh, you were making some headlines yesterday. You and some of your counterparts in the House announced the new initiative, Commonwealth COVID Comeback. Tell us about this.
Yeah, thank you, Bill, for having me on the show. The Commonwealth COVID Comeback is really an initiative focused on making Pennsylvania competitive so that we can compete with states around us, so that we can compete globally. The goal is to leverage the resources that we have, and we have a lot of great resources in Pennsylvania. We have a lot of great natural resources. We have a good workforce. We have good universities, a robust farming community. But we need to leverage those and fix our deficiencies so that we can move forward and create a better normal. It's the concept of a package, or the concepts that are within the package, rather, are around fixing our tax code. It's around fixing our regulatory scheme. It's incentivizing manufacturers to come. It's investigating how we can do a better job of developing our workforce. And it's also has a provision regarding civil liability for manufacturers and healthcare workers during the COVID crisis. We want to make sure that the businesses that were hit so hard over the past 9 months aren't punished for the next 20 years by plaintiffs' attorneys. We think that there is, and there's good evidence to show that if we were to do these types of things, Pennsylvania, with its already resources that we have here, would be very, very well positioned to have a manufacturing renaissance and other jobs coming to the area as well. You know, the Department of Energy noted just about 6 or 7 months ago that this area could be set to have 100,000 plus new manufacturing full-time jobs. That's just in manufacturing. That's not in the construction of it. And in my district, I am about 2 miles away from where the Shell petrochemical plant is. And we've seen the economic benefits of construction and manufacturing. We had 8,500 people working at that plant before COVID. Now we've got about 6,500. And those individuals are making anywhere from $100,000 to $180,000 a year. It's good, solid, blue-collar work. It's hard work, but it's Pennsylvania work. And those individuals are going out into the community and spending money. And it's just been a tremendous economic boom for the area. It's something that we need to have happen across the state. We need to keep the momentum going. And this initiative is precisely geared to do that.
You know, I'm really excited about this, Josh. You and I have spent some time together out in the western side of the state. You actually took myself, George Stark, and Alex Epstein up to see the cracker plant, see the construction of it. You walked us through the impact that it's having on your area out there. And quite honestly, there's no reason why Pennsylvania shouldn't be attracting other large-scale investments, whether it be in the petrochemical side or the manufacturing or fertilizer side. But then with COVID, I think as much as it has sucked, I don't have any other way to put it, I think it's given us an opportunity. Everybody keeps talking about why we should be bringing these opportunities back here, why we're too dependent on foreign countries. And to me, now it's that moment, like, let's do this. And I think your bill package is setting us up to try and attract those businesses, help them get over. I spend a great deal of time working with companies trying to locate here to Pennsylvania, but often we lose them to Ohio, West Virginia, Texas, Canada, Gulf Coast, or even foreign countries because Pennsylvania is just so difficult and there's so many uncertainties. Now, you guys did pass earlier this year Act 66, the Local Resource Manufacturing Tax Credit, which I think will be huge for attracting petrochemicals to the area. But everything you guys line out here are the same questions, comments, and concerns developers are giving me on a regular basis.
I've been talking to them as well, because we're trying to gear up here in Beaver and Washington County to have a manufacturing explosion based off of the petrochemical plant, the opportunity, the downstream opportunity there's going to be there, and there will be more development. What I'm concerned about is I've talked to people that are looking to invest, and they come to Pennsylvania, and there's a lot of things that they like, the rivers, the railways, the places, the manufacturing sites that are there already. There's a lot of natural infrastructure that's already in place. But I tell you, every time it comes back to the same things. It's the regulatory scheme, it's the unpredictability, and it's the corporate tax rate. And these aren't problems that are new. I mean, we've been dealing with those problems for some time. It's just with what we have gone through and where we're at, now is the time. We need a sense of urgency to fix these problems because we need a boost to our economy. And we need people investing in Pennsylvania. And it's something that we got to get done now.
And Josh, as you mentioned, you know, we have the resources here, as you mentioned, the infrastructure, you know, the energy resources, and also, like you said, the people resources. You know, Pennsylvania's got obviously a legacy, a strong manufacturing background. We have the training for through, you know, colleges, university training centers, you know, it goes on and on, tech schools. And it's great to see this because as we've all dealt with trying to attract or bring companies here or talking with manufacturers about expanding, it's you know, disheartening at times, like when we lose one, like you said, you know, to other states or other countries, as Bill was alluding to. And I think maybe talk a little bit, as you mentioned, you know, the Shell facility is, you know, it's in your backyard basically there. And while that in itself is a tremendous boom, you know, $6-8 billion investment, you mentioned the jobs and the salaries, you know, these family sustaining wages. Ages, you know, maybe talk a little bit about what you guys see or hope to see coming down the pike, you know, as the Shell facility goes online, hopefully here, you know, within the next year. And, you know, some of that manufacturing, as you mentioned, you're kind of gearing up for this, hopefully this manufacturing boom that you're going to see in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I got to tell you, it feels great to talk about these issues again, because I feel like the only issues I've been talking about for the last 7 or 8 months have been around masks and the governor's actions and all this other stuff. And that stuff obviously was what was present, but growing our economy is what I'm passionate about and we need to do it now. So about a decade ago, a little less than a decade ago, Louisiana on the Gulf finished out a petrochemical facility. And since then, there has been $156 billion of new investment in the area. And that's just a colossal amount of investment. You think of the cracker plant, is $7 billion. We're not expecting that type of level of investment. There's obvious reasons why Louisiana is wants that way, because it's right there in the Gulf, and it's an international port and all this other factors, but we are expecting significant investment in this region. And there's really three different places. There's the Pittsburgh area, which I include Beaver County in. And then there's also the Weirton, which is West Virginia on the Panhandle, and there's Steubenville, which is Ohio. And those are the three general geographical locations that people are looking at. And we're expecting a significant increase in manufacturing activity and construction. In fact, there's another petrochemical facility going up in Ohio. They're closing on some different contracts. There's been some noise about it potentially switching owners as far as who's actually going to build it. But by all indications, it's going to be built. And it's one of the blessings of having abundant and reliable energy, and we have so much natural gas here, and having these manufacturers come is big, not just because of all the jobs that they're bringing, not just because of the downstream activity, but it also keeps demand up for natural gas, which means more jobs in that industry as well. And that industry is providing something like 600,000 jobs directly and indirectly in Pennsylvania. So it's a good win across the board. It's an opportunity for us to heat our facilities here, to have our facilities in Pennsylvania, to have our facilities making stuff in Pennsylvania, and then also to buying stuff, again, that's made in Pennsylvania. It's very much vertically integrated, where we could have everything in Pennsylvania, and we can enjoy each benefit at every stage of of the process.
Yeah, and I think at your press conference earlier this week, I'm not sure if it was you or who mentioned about, you know, that the made in the U.S. is, you know, why can't we have it made in Pennsylvania? I mean, I think that's a great, you know, idea. And as you mentioned, you know, vertically integrated, you know, we're at that point right now. We have that tremendous opportunity to capitalize on that. You know, and like you said, now is the time. You know, your package of bills, you know, there's you know, some key areas there, obviously, to help move forward and to get to the point where we can make Pennsylvania more attractive. You know, as a father with a couple kids in college, and, you know, I'm looking forward to the opportunities that, you know, they have now to stay local versus, you know, just, you know, when I grew up and when I went through college and so forth. And, you know, I'm here in North Central Pennsylvania, and I know that the development that's taken place in, you know, in your district in southwestern Pennsylvania does impact and has a tremendous benefit here to, you know, the entire Commonwealth. So, you know, again, I'm excited to see these, you know, these initiatives move forward. And I guess the question I ask here is, you know, we have an audience who's very supportive of, you know, the natural gas and the industry as a whole, and always looking forward to, you know, what can they do to help move this forward? You know, Bill and I, and, you know, we'd love to capitalize, you know, use our network to help move initiatives forward. So maybe, you know, let us know, or let our listeners know what they can do to help move some of these initiatives forward and kind of help you and your team to success here.
Yeah, I think what's important at this point is to keep the momentum going, talking about it. Explaining why these initiatives are very important and real. I mean, this isn't stuff that's just check marks. This is real initiatives that will make substantive changes. And it's about, at this point, it's about selling it in the sense where convincing people that this is the right thing to do and that it's going to effectuate a substantial level of change. And that's what we're going to do for the next, you know, these things don't happen overnight. We introduced it. We had a great introduction. It's going to end up being bipartisan. I've talked to Democrats on it already as well. And these issues are really issues that people generally understand are problems in Pennsylvania. We might have different ways of approaching it, but at the end of the day, we need to get them done this time. And we've been talking about cutting the corporate tax rate for a long time. And I remember the governor had a proposal on cutting it last year. And it just kind of went back and forth, and there's some disagreements. And when the economy is humming and everything is, you know, the unemployment rate's at 4% or something, the sense of urgency didn't seem like it was there. Well, now we definitely have a sense of urgency, and we need to act on it. The regulatory scheme, the problems that we are having there, everybody knows it. And what we're asking to be done with our bill in this package, my good friend John Fritz, it isn't something that's radical. It's just putting a timeline on the approval process of permits. It's something that's done in New York. It's done in Vermont. It's done in California. But you know what? I have heard from so many different developers, from people building pipelines, from people developing in other ways, that they don't want to come to Pennsylvania because their permits are getting lost. And they sometimes it's a year or two before they even hear anything. And they just don't know what to do about it. And it's very frustrating. It's simple stuff like that. If we fixed, we'd be so much more attractive. And you know, you're right. It's about the next generation. I grew up, I'm one of seven. And I saw my siblings, you know, go around the country, and I had a brother that worked in Louisiana, a sister that worked in Louisiana, another brother in Atlanta, Texas, another one left the country. I saw my siblings spread out across the country, not necessarily because they wanted to, right? Because the opportunity wasn't here. And I have seven kids myself now, and I want to be a part of building a Pennsylvania where they can pursue their God-given talents right here in Pennsylvania. And I think we have the opportunity to do that. And I think one of the major obstacles to it is the state government. And that's what we're trying to fix.
Well, Josh, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. You're welcome to come back anytime as you go through this process. You've assembled a great set of bills and a great set of representatives that I think will do a hell of a job to getting this over the finish line. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing more development across the state. Where can people go to find more information about you and your work?
We can go to reptail.com. You can go there or go our Facebook page, State Rep, PA State Rep Josh Kale. That's actually the best place. The Facebook page gets out a lot of information right up to date. It's PA State Rep Josh Kale.
Great. Well, Josh, thanks again for joining us on the program. We're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation. Producing abundant opportunities.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-736. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome to the Energy Update, presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of October 19th, 2020. I'm Alex Stevens. There's a couple things I want to highlight for our listeners this week that we have going on at IER. First is a blog post from IER's head economist, David Kreutzer, titled Politics 101, How Lobbyists and Special Interests, Not the Poor, Will Benefit in Biden's Climate Justice Plan. The blog goes through the $857 billion Obama-Biden 2009 stimulus plan and its goal to create 5 million new green jobs. And in the blog, Dr. Kreutzer points out that these programs were pretty much a colossal failure in terms of creating jobs, and that a good number of the grants and loan guarantees ended up going to not creating jobs, but pretty much the wealthy. So the blog goes on to point out that this is sort of a preview of what is to come in Biden's climate justice plan. Essentially, it is a lot of welfare for the rich. And then the second thing I want to point listeners' attention to is our latest episode of the Plugged In podcast. I had Tom Tanton of E&E Legal on, and he discussed a new report that they put out on the cost of electrification. Here's a clip from that episode.
The intent is to start a discussion. What is this electrification going to cost us? I've given my ideas about what it's going to cost. Others have made may have other ideas, but let's not run willy-nilly into electrification before we understand what all the costs are, what all the risk items are and stuff. You know, I refer to the California situation in 2000. First of all, California never had an energy crisis. California had a capacity crisis. We had plenty of energy, just at the wrong places at the wrong time. And people never really understood that. The other thing they didn't understand was they were, you know, fussing around with the generation mix, not the delivery infrastructure. So you have to look at everything sort of in the integrated fashion.
All of that content and more work from IR staff can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
And joining us on the Shale Gas News here, our guest, Jim Bognett. Met Jim a couple of weeks ago at the one of the campaign headquarters for Lackawanna County in Old Forge, my hometown, along with James May and some other candidates. Mr. Bognett is running for the 8th District. It's Bognett for Congress. Jim, it's great to call us on the program, and thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you this morning, Rusty.
Hey, you know, we had a brief talk when we met a few weeks ago, and you are certainly a dynamic political entity to deal with, and this area, you know, certainly needs that. I always make a joke, and it's not really a joke, but I say if I see your name on the ballot, you know, for the last 35 years, you ain't getting my vote. I don't care what you're going to do for the area, but it's time to put some new blood into a position, and this is a position that certainly needs a transfusion, Jim.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, we have a situation where we have someone representing us who's done nothing for 8 years. And my opponent, Matt Cartwright, voted for impeachment. He's not helped the residents of northeastern Pennsylvania. And I think the reason for that, Rusty, is because he's not one of us. He doesn't think like us. He doesn't act like us. He's worth $10-20 million, has 4 beach houses, vacation houses, and he flies back and forth to D.C. in a private jet. So I don't know about you, Rusty, but I've never had a private jet. And I don't think if you fly back and forth to your job in a private jet, you can understand what people who drive a car with 100,000 miles back and forth to work, or you know, take a bus through Scranton or Wilkes-Barre to get to work, really go through on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it, Jim. I'm not in that class as of yet. There's still some time. You know, you think now, if I were running for office, you would think that the average person, and you know, maybe I'm overstating the cause here, but the average person feels, and I'm one of those average people when it comes to voting, that you only see some people, and when it's every 4 years, when it's time for a re-election. And don't you think that would bother? See, that would bother me if I were running for office, and the only time you saw me is a spate of television commercials about a month before the election, and have done absolutely nothing. Don't you think that you would change your modus operandi a little bit?
Well, that's the funny thing, Rusty. We don't even see him in person. I mean, he's hiding in Joe Biden's basement. The only thing we see are these TV commercials bought and paid for by D.C. insiders. I mean, some of these commercials aren't even coming from his campaign. They're coming from what Nancy Pelosi attacking me, calling, going after me about D.C. I mean, this guy's been in D.C. for 8 years and done nothing for our community. I grew up in Hazelden, Rusty. I grew up cutting lawns and having a paper route to make money to try to save to go to college. I went to Penn State University on academic scholarship. I'm really proud of playing football and basketball, baseball here in Hazleton in high school. And, you know, my grandfather was a coal miner. So I know what it's like, you know, for the average person in northeastern Pennsylvania and what they have to deal with. And I think that's why I support the president so much. That's why I support drilling and the energy industry, because we need good jobs for average people here in Pennsylvania.
That's a good thing. And we spoke about that when we met, too, that a lot of folks don't realize that, you know, you got to watch what you wish for, because if you put Biden in, you know, he flip flops back and forth on this fracking issue. First, he's not going to allow fracking. Then he is. Then he's going to limit it. And whatever the percent ratio is, that'll, I guess, be determined if he even goes that route. But again, as we mentioned when we spoke in person a couple of weeks ago, you know, folks have to realize that, you know, right now you're getting a bargain when it comes to natural gas and energy and home heating and all that, you know. Who knows what this winter will bring? Had a mild one last year, was a windfall. But again, you never really know, even with the projections. So, you know, when you put someone in who's going to eliminate fracking, where, you know, about 90% of the natural gas comes out of, you know, mainly Susquehanna County in your district, in your territory, in this area, northeastern Pennsylvania, we feed the world again like we did with anthracite and bituminous coal 60, 70 years ago. And, you know, you eliminate that fracking and you're going to, you know, exponentially, I'm not even going to say 3 or 4 times, exponentially to be determined on the severity of the winter, multiply the prices of natural gas. So, you know, when the gas bill, and you put Biden in, if you put Biden in, or you're looking toward putting Biden in, and you say, well, how can that possibly affect my home heating bill? Everything's run by the, you know, the PUC and Commerce Commissions and all that. You got to watch, because it's the trickle-down effect, because you put someone like that in, and you really don't know that it's going to affect your home heating bill incredibly. Jim.
Well, I'll tell you, we should be the Saudi Arabia of natural gas here in northeastern Pennsylvania. We have amazing reserves in these shale deposits across the state. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Matt Cartwright, Ilhan Omar, AOC, these people are controlled by the elitist on the West Coast. They want to destroy the natural gas economy, and we can't let them do that. You know, I talk about my grandfather a lot. He came here at 4 years old, an Italian immigrant, came through Ellis Island. They changed his name from Guiccio to Bognet, and he raised 9 kids. And on the salary of a coal miner with some second jobs at night, digging ditches, digging graves, delivering coal on weekends, he was able to raise 9 kids that went on to be doctors and lawyers and business owners and teachers. And that's the American dream we want for our families nowadays. And there are great jobs in fracking, in energy exploration. And if we let Matt Cartwright and Nancy Pelosi get in charge, we know that they're going to be driving the bus. We know it's going to be an Omar Pelosi bus. And that bus is not good for northeastern Pennsylvania, because it will be socialism and it will be an end to our natural gas industry. And I don't want that to happen. And that's one of the reasons I'm running for Congress.
The 8th Congressional District, Bognet for Congress, Jim Bognet. Jim, thank you so much for joining us here on the Shale Gas News. It was my pleasure having you on the program, my friend.
Thank you, Rusty. Bognetforcongress.com. Thanks so much, Rusty.
Safe are natural gas pipelines.
Pipelines are the safest, most reliable way to move gas. In fact, you really can't move natural gas any other way. You can't get to a home, you can't get to a manufacturing facility without the use of a pipeline.
The amount of savings a customer is seeing is on average $2,000 a year. Think about that, $2,000 in savings.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor, producing the thing here. And it's time for the top five stories of the week, and then we'll get to the job segment coming up right after this. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So this week we have for you another summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, Pennsylvania's Lackawanna College School of Petroleum and Natural Gas relocating. Years ago, we told you about the top-notch program at Lackawanna College in northeastern Pennsylvania, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, which, by the way, they sponsor the job segment coming up in just a few minutes. But the PNG program is unique, one of just a handful nationwide that runs a 2-year program to train students to be technicians, able to operate sophisticated machinery and run compressor stations, for example.
The Lackawanna PNG program has outgrown its current location. PNG is currently located less than a half hour down I-81 from NDN headquarters, just off exit 209 on the PA side of 219, rather, on the PA side of the border in New Milford Township, Susquehanna County. There's no more room for expansion at the current location, so PNG is relocating about 40 minutes from the present location to the small village of Tunkhannock, Wyoming County, not far from Dimmock of Gasland fame. The new location will allow the school to expand its laboratory from 2,000 to 5,000 square feet. Nice. And there's more storage for big equipment, too. According to PNG program director Sue Gumbel, the location puts the program closer to a larger pool of students. An added bonus.
Wow, how about that?
Nice. All right. Good for Lackawanna College. All right.
Everybody else is closing down. They're limiting things and doing classes via Zoom, and they're moving for a bigger lab. Good for them.
Very
That's
nice.
Great.
Nice.
Number four, D.C., Olympus Energy, meaning formerly Huntley and Huntley Energy, gets a new CEO. Olympus Energy, the renamed Huntley and Huntley Energy Exploration, HHEX on the stock exchange, has a new CEO. The new guy is Tim Dugan, who joined Olympus in January as the company's COO. Tim is replacing Chris Doyle, who is staying on the board but leaving the area to become CEO of Primex Energy Partners, a Dallas-based oil driller. Olympus leases land, 100,000 acres, and drills in the Pittsburgh suburbs. Last December, then-CEO Chris Doyle said the company drilled 11 shale wells in 2019 and had plans to drill another 10 to 11 this year. Dugan is the guy who, until now, oversaw the new drilling. Olympus promoted Michael Wall to become the new COO and Manny Johnson to become VP of Operations. Both Wall and Johnson have been with Olympus since 2016, D.
All right. Number three, Shale Insight 2020, day number two, renewable energy myth, unions love gas. A couple of weeks ago, the second day of Shale Insight began with a keynote delivered by West Virginia U.S. Senator Joe Manchin. He mouthed support for the shale industry in an unremarkable talk. The real belle of the ball was another speaker, Mark Mills, an author, senior fellow for the Manhattan Institute, and frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal. Mills is an energy expert. We've quoted his work on MDN many times. His talk was very remarkable. Mills' talk was titled A Reality Check, Green, in quotes, energy, mines, and minerals. He began by stating the obvious. This has been an epic year for the shale industry and for the world, given the coronavirus. COVID-19 and the resulting worldwide shutdown has been, according to Mills, the biggest destruction in energy demand since World War II. Mills addressed the folly of giving up fossil fuel energy for renewables by using a number of statistics and arguments. For example, after two decades and hundreds of billions of dollars invested in solar and wind, those two sources supply roughly 2% of all energy worldwide. That kind of punctuates the everything is going renewables meme, no? Greenies tout electric vehicles. Mills said the battery needed to power a single car weighs about 1,000 pounds, takes roughly 500,000 pounds of dirt and rock and minerals moved and mined in order to produce that 1,000 pound car battery. Wow. We don't see all of that mining destruction here in the U.S. because we've restricted mining. We don't like it. It's dirty. So the mining that happens for our car batteries gets done in other countries where ignorant antis can't see it happening. Holocaust is happening in other countries to satisfy the demands of American antis.
Another fast fact, 1,000 pounds, huh?
Wow.
For an electric car battery.
Wow.
I knew
all
it was
right.
A lot, but I didn't know it was that much.
Jeez.
Number two, D. Peregrine buys royalty rights from Bradford County, Pennsylvania landowners. Now, Peregrine Energy Partners, headquartered in Dallas, Texas, continues a program to buy royalty rights in the Marcellus Utica region. Yesterday, the company announced a deal to buy the rights for 4,755 gross acres in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, for an undisclosed sum. The sellers are private landowners, rights owners, a retired couple with wells drilled by Chief Oil and Gas. There is a change-up in strategy for Peregrine, which usually buys mineral rights in southwestern Pennsylvania rather than the northeast region. Peregrine says it plans to buy more mineral rights in northeastern Pennsylvania. This is the third such purchase by Peregrine in Pennsylvania this year. DC?
All right, the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week: has the shale drilling boom in north central Pennsylvania gone bust? By any measure, it's obvious to see that shale drilling activity in north central Pennsylvania counties, including Bradford, Clinton, Lycoming, Potter, Sullivan, and Tioga, is on the bust side over the past 5+ years. 2016 was the low point. However, is there any hope of seeing another boom in shale drilling in the region? The news website, northcentralpa.com, located in Williamsport, compared the number of new wells spud, drilled that is, in six north central PA counties from 2010 to 2020. The survey looked at the number of new wells from January 1st through October 1st for each year. So it's not a perfect comparison, but it is useful, especially the opening chart, which tells the story. Has the shale gas boom gone bust in north central PA? That would be a no. If you look at production data, production numbers remain high throughout the region. What has gone bust is the drilling of new wells. Fewer new wells drilled means less jobs and less economic stimulus in the region. As the article points out, if gas prices begin to rise, you'll likely see an increase in drilling again. However, don't look for new drilling to ever hit the same high levels of a decade ago. Those days are long gone. And there you have it, the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. Now it's time for the jobs segment, brought to you by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, the newly expanding
and relocating
School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Boy, good for them. Thanks, DC. In Pennsylvania, we'll start Stantec looking for a mid to senior environmental FERC project manager. It's based in Pittsburgh. Giant Eagle looking for a CNG mechanic and technician out of Hermitage. Seneca Resources Company looking for a representative for their stakeholder relations, also out of Pittsburgh. WC Welding, a compressor operator based in Montrose. Integrated Power Services, an HR environmental health and safety manager in Indiana, Pennsylvania, the southwest corner of the state. JW Energy Company looking for a compressor service technician. That's a compression service technician, pardon me, out of Towanda. The Weir Group, an iron technician out of Muncie. Patterson UTI, an equipment operator based in Lamont Furnace, and Redstone Resources and Acquisitions, a person and landman, also out of Pittsburgh. In Ohio, Deering Compressor has an opening for a vessel engineer for their gas storage division out of Youngstown. Duke Energy, a 2021 summer co-op with natural gas engineering team. Six openings. It's a good deal. Not sure if that's paid or not, but it's with Duke Energy in Cincinnati. Ohio's Electric Cooperatives, an opening for an operations analyst level one out of Columbus. Environmental consulting and technology, a wetland delineator and ecologist out of Northfield. EnLink Midstream, a crude hauler for their CDL driver division, that's out of KDIS. Diversified Gas and Oil, also looking for a land analyst out of Canton. Energy Transfer Family of Partnerships, a supervisor for their pipeline operations out of Fostoria. And TC Energy, a corrosion specialist and construction technician for engineering, based in Sugar Grove. In West Virginia, K&R Operating, a field service technician opening for the entire mountain state of West Virginia. Same deal for the entire state with Mid-Ohio Pipeline Services, pipeline welders, flux core stick shielded metal arc for the entire state once again. Team Fischel, a gas foreman and crew lead, it's out of Huntington. Shale Pro Energy Services, roustabouts, plural opening, many openings, that's out of Clarksburg. Shale Pro Energy Services also has a gas compression mechanic position open out of Bridgeport. Archrock, also looking for a compression mechanic based in Bridgeport. Johnson Service Group, a quality technician opening for their pipeline unit out of Charleston, and TC Energy in West Virginia, looking for an administrative analyst in GIS, that's a Geographic Information Systems Analyst, that's out of Charleston. Got a few in New York State. Exelon Corporation, a business development manager opening based in Syracuse. Kinder Morgan, big name in the business and operations administrator out of Eden. Area Energy and Operations Technician for their pipeline division out of Waterloo. Suburban Propane, looking for an office manager headquartered in Rochester and Dominion Energy in the gas and electric business, looking for a gas measurement specialist that would be headquartered in Ithaca. Good luck in your job search. And, of course, those jobs, as DC mentioned, were sponsored by Lackawanna College. Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We thank you for sharing all your thoughts and all your insight here on The Energy Show. It's the Shale Gas News right here on our network of stations, Gem 104. And, of course, online all the time at TalkWilliamsport.com. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fenya. We'll see you back here next week, same time, same stations on the Shale Gas News.